You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
We've been told that the ongoing economic crisis came with little warning, that it was the result of complex, enigmatic interactions between different actors in the global financial market. In contrast to this perspective, economist Richard Wolff has argued that the crisis wasn't at all unexpected. In fact, it developed over the last 30 years. Richard Wolff is professor of economics emeritus at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where he taught economics from 1973 to 2008. He's currently a visiting professor at the New York School University in New York City, and he also teaches classes at the Brecht Forum in Manhattan. He is the author of numerous books in political economy, including Capitalism Hits the Fan, The Global Economic Meltdown, and What to Do About It. Richard Wolff joins us over the phone from New York City. Hello, Richard, and welcome to Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Now, you've argued that we are currently experiencing a crisis in capitalism, not merely a crisis of finance. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that the term financial crisis was an understandable effort of the media and politicians to give the impression of their hopes, which is that this crisis would be contained to merely a part of our economic system. But everything that has happened since it officially began late in 2007 has indicated that it is a crisis that cuts across all of our society and all our entire economic system, in manufacturing, in services, in the north, south, east, and west. It is decimating the economy of the United States, and the costs of this will hit every single family, as it already does, and will last for many, many years. And it's a sign that a system is not working very well, and it is long overdue in the United States, at least, for us to finally face that and have a national debate around the question of whether we don't need a change in our economic system so that we don't keep suffering these economic downturns, and especially the deep and long-lasting ones of the sort we have now.
And it's been almost 3 years since the onset of the crisis. Some are suggesting that we're now entering into a phase of economic recovery. What's your analysis of that?
I think that's a terrible mistake. Again, perhaps understandable. Folks want to get over with this and want to resume their lives and don't want to believe that a long-term decline is underway, as increasingly we think it is. So they talk about a recovery. To start with, there has been a recovery, but for a very small sector of our economy. Large banks, a bunch of larger corporations, and the stock market, where the interests of these banks and corporations are played with on a daily basis. But that touches 5% of our people, if that. And the recovery is not hard to explain, because the United States government borrowed and created over $2-3 trillion, depending on how you count, and threw it at those sectors, so they're doing well. For the mass of the American people, no such recovery is underway. We have 10% unemployment, has been the same for 2 years, no sign of it ending. We'll have more people thrown out of their homes through foreclosures in 2011 than we had in 2010, and that was a record year. Job wages are poor, benefits are being cut, job insecurity is growing. No. For the mass of people, there is no recovery. There's just the pain of reading and watching on television all this talk about a recovery from which they are excluded.
And your analysis, I understand, is essentially a Marxist one. Is that correct?
Yes.
And have you seen a growth in interest in this kind of analysis since the onset of the crisis?
Well, just to give you a very personal answer, I have been invited to do more public speaking, to appear on more radio and television programs in the last 24 months than in the previous 40 years of a career as a professional economist, a professor of economics at several American universities. So the answer is yes. This is so clearly becoming a major crisis of capitalism on a global scale that an increasing number of people are able to see beyond the particular issues of the banking sector or the particular issues of folks who can't pay their mortgages anymore, etc., and beginning to recognize that rather than scapegoat this or that group, whether you're on the left or right, it really is the system. And we kind of know in the United States that because of the Cold War, we've been unable and afraid of asking and questioning our economic system. But now we can't wait anymore because the costs of keeping going with this system are simply mounting to the level of unsustainability.
And you've argued that in order to avoid the instability of capitalism and its huge social costs, we need to fundamentally change the system. What does that look like to you?
Well, I think there, and these are great questions you're asking, by the way, so thank you, but there we have to be very honest and self-critical, those of us that come from the left. Some of the early experiments in how to build a post-capitalist society didn't work out so well, and we have to learn the lessons of why. So what we're advocating, a growing number of us in the United States, is something that isn't so much focused on the national level, on the macro level, we call it, nationalizing property, planning instead of markets. We're a little less interested in those kinds of changes than in making sure that at the base of society, something fundamental changes. And what we're focusing on is what used to be called in many countries cooperative enterprises. That is a new way of organizing production so that the people who do the work, the vast majority of those who come Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and do the work, become democratically participants in making all the decisions. What we don't want anymore is a small group of people, major shareholders, selecting another small group of people, boards of directors, who then make all the decisions, what to produce, how to produce, where to produce, what to do with the profits, where the mass of people have to live with the results of those decisions but have no say in them. If our argument goes, if democracy is good in the community where we live, then democracy ought to be just as good in the enterprise where we work. So what we're really interested in is changing that so that the people themselves who do the work will control the wealth that their labor produces, and we will decide together, literally in a commonwealth, how to proceed in our economic system, because the old capitalist way is simply not working anymore, and that therefore means change is on the horizon.
When you present these kinds of ideas in meetings, I guess you've been traveling a lot in North America and in Europe, talking about these kinds of things. What are you taking away from these meetings, and what are people's responses?
Very interesting. On the one hand, the sort of the good news and bad news, I'll do it. The good news first. People are enormously excited. Partly this comes out of a sense of frustration and upset that the economy could go through such a crisis. That was the first upset. That it would affect so many people. That was the second upset. That the government would respond by the old discredited trickle-down theory, throwing all the money at the top of the pyramid, the richest banks, the biggest corporations, and hoping it would trickle down, which, of course, it has not done. So people are determined, looking at all of that, to make change. And I get a very excited response that change is possible and change could develop in these directions. So that's the good news. The audience for this kind of criticism, if you call it the criticism from the left, has never been as positive in my lifetime in the United States as an American citizen as it is today, and that includes the 1960s. Here's the bad news. We have no organizations on the left in the United States, unlike Europe, and even in many ways unlike Canada. We do not have a strong trade union movement. Ours has been in a 50-year decline. We don't have any socialist, communist, or other green political parties on the left that might provide some insight, might provide some leadership. So even though the crisis has been worse in its effects here than in Europe, the Europeans are years ahead of us in mounting mass opposition, limiting the austerity their government can impose on people as a way of shifting the costs of this crisis onto the masses. We have to either rebuild those institutions in the United States, or we're going to have to build new organizations, and that's both depressing Americans, because that takes time and effort, but also it is, in a sense, motivating them to recognize that if we're going to make a change and if we're going to rescue this society from a long period of decline, rebuilding new or rebuilding old organizations on the left is the first order of business.
What kinds of things do you think people should get involved in, or what kinds of ways can they get involved in building those kinds of movements?
Well, that's the interesting thing. Again, the mixture of good news and bad news. The bad news is we kind of have to start from scratch. Our trade unions are small and weak. Just to remind your listeners, in the private sector of the United States, which is much, much larger than the public sector, it is the main sector of our economy, 6.9% of private sector workers are represented by a union. 93.1% do not have a union. So for all practical purposes, our unions in the private sector are defunct. And since the public sector is now under attack, the unionization there, which is larger as a percentage, but still a minority, is itself under attack. So we cannot expect weak, declining institutions to do this job. So the bad news is we don't have socialist, communist, and green parties of any size, and we don't have a viable labor movement except one that is small and declining. That's the bad news. The good news, always the dialectic of good and bad woven together, the good news is we're starting from scratch. You don't have heavy historical legacies to worry about, to slow you down, to hold you back with people who are afraid of making change. What we're going to see in the United States, I'm quite sure, in the years ahead, is a tremendous upsurge, probably led by young people in their 20s and 30s, who literally don't have the historical background, do not have the organizations, the elders to hold them back, and are going to quickly discover those ways, perhaps using the internet, perhaps using new ways of Facebook and all the rest, to find avenues for getting together and building the organizations that everyone now realizes is the next business for us to undertake. And I suspect that we will be as surprised by the speed and intensity of what develops here, as, for example, the world has been surprised over the last 2 weeks to discover that what we thought were stable, under control, North African societies like Tunisia and Egypt were, in fact, below the surface, building explosions that can no longer be contained in the old systems that were there.
Wow, it sounds like a lot is afoot.
Yeah, I think your southern neighbors here in the United States, that things are percolating here in a way we have not seen for a long, long time. Theoretically, politically, culturally, it's still below the surface, but it is boiling on a scale. As again, I'll just say it personally, I've never seen, born 60 years ago in Ohio in an industrial city called Youngstown, that's where I come from, and having traveled this country all back and forth, I've never seen anything like the level of ferment that is going on now.
Well, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Oh, I'd be glad to any time, and I appreciate the stations like yours that have the courage to air these sorts of perspectives and look at these things in an honest way.
I've been speaking to Richard Wolff. He's an economist and the author of numerous books, including Capitalism Hits the Fan, The Global Economic Meltdown, and What to Do About It. For more information about his work, go to rdwolff, that's rdwolff.com. The website features a rich archive of articles, videos, and audio clips.